Now, a coin toss was held last week to decide who would make the first opening statement. Having won the coin toss, Congressman Aiken has decided to go second. So, Senator McCaskill, you have 3 minutes to deliver your opening statement.
Thank you very much. Thank you for the sponsors of the debate, to Congressman Aiken for being here. I know the audience is not supposed to make any noises, but if people could hold up fingers for the Cardinals score during the debate, that would be great. If you're watching this at home, having taped it, I understand completely. It is great to be here and great to have a debate about some very important issues that Missourians face. I went to Washington, D.C. as an auditor and a prosecutor to solve problems for Missouri's families and to hold government accountable to taxpayers. I knew it would take a couple of things. It would take some hard work, it would take compromise, and it would take a willingness to work across the aisle with my Republican colleagues. So I rolled up my sleeves. First, earmarks. I had no idea how ugly the earmarking process was until I got there. A favor factory. Lobbyists, campaign donations. I said, I'm not going to play this game. We should spend public money based on merit, not based on who you know or who you're helping out. So I never asked for an earmark. And I went to work with Republican Senators McCain and DeMint and other Republican colleagues against the majority of my party, and we banned earmarks. I'm proud of that work. Congressman Aiken has requested hundreds of earmarks, and until very recently was a proud defender of the earmarking process, saying it was a constitutional principle. Then there was contracting. As a prosecutor, I looked at the government contracting that was going on. I looked at what was happening in Iraq and Afghanistan with abusive, wasteful contracts. Once again, working with both Democrats and Republicans, we were able to move across government and really reform some of the bureaucracies that were wasting your money through wasteful contracting practices. And then Senator Jeff Sessions, more than a couple of years ago, came to me, very conservative Republican senator from Alabama, and said, you know, Claire, you seem like the kind of Democrat that would work with me on putting a cap on federal spending. And I said, I am that kind of Democrat. And together, even though my party's leadership fought me, we worked to put a cap on federal spending. And I think our legislation made a difference. A strong bipartisan record. It is much different than Congressman Aiken's record. Congressman Aiken has been one of a handful of congressmen voting against some very mainstream programs, a very extreme record. He wants to privatize Medicare, abolish the minimum wage. He wants to say that rape victims cannot get contraception on an emergency basis. He wants to say that we have no more student loans in the federal system. He wants to, in fact, privatize Social Security. And he even says that the boss has the right to discriminate against you if you're a woman. He says that's freedom. I say that's unfair. Moderate versus conservative, Senator. Moderate versus extreme. I think there's a very big choice for Missourians to make.
Thank you, Senator. Congressman Aiken, you now have 3 minutes for your opening statement.
Well, thank you all for being here and for making the debate possible. I'm an engineer, served as an Army officer, worked for IBM, where I met my wife of 37 years. We've been blessed with 6 children, 8 grandchildren. 3 of my children were in the Naval Academy and became Marines. 1 is in the Mediterranean serving tonight. I'm particularly blessed also tonight to have my parents who are here with us. Dad is 91, served with Patton in World War II, and my mother, we've talked her into cooking dinner for us on Sunday nights. Now, I think that we're all here because we want an America with a bright and cheerful hope for the future. But that good future that we want has to come with right choices and wise decisions. Unfortunately, Claire McCaskill and Barack Obama have not given us such a future. Claire McCaskill was the first to endorse Barack Obama, and she was his strong right hand, passing legislation, voting with him 98% of the time. And what exactly does that record look like? First of all, in the area of jobs, instead of the promises from the $787 billion stimulus bill, we have 43 months of the worst unemployment since the Great Depression. Deficits. We were promised that the deficits would be cut in half, and they've been tripled. We're off by a factor of 6. Energy, the Obama-McCaskill record. the funding of Solyndra, the EPA given the power to shut down the coal industry, and, of course, stopping drilling and the Keystone Pipeline, and gasoline prices have doubled. Health care, it's even worse. 71% of us in Missouri voted against the government takeover of health care, and Claire McCaskill, right after that, voted to pass it. Now, there's a reason for this record of failures, and that's because Obama and McCaskill have a deep and abiding faith that big government is the solution to every problem, and that's why they couldn't fulfill their records. Now, Claire has gone to Washington, D.C., and she has brought us red tape and taxes and all kinds of bureaucracy and executive orders. And she doesn't understand that these big government solutions choke out freedom. Now, what I would suggest is that you could bring me to Washington, D.C. in the Senate so that we could take the Missouri common sense back to Washington, D.C., and not a lot of bureaucracy. Cut down the taxes and the red tape and the bureaucracy and build an American dream and build the American family once again to be strong and restore a bright hope for our future. Thank you very much. I look forward to joining you in the rest of the debate.
Congressman, thank you. Next, we turn to our panelists for their questions of the candidates. Ellen Sherberg, publisher of the St. Louis Business Journal, will pose the first question. And Ellen, your question goes to Congressman Aiken, who will have 1.5 minutes to respond.
Congressman Aiken, just today, the heads of Goldman Sachs, Bank of America, Citigroup, and many other major financial institutions sent a letter urging the President and Congress to avoid the looming tax hikes and spending cuts that we call the fiscal cliff. Which of your stated positions are you willing to compromise to break this budget gridlock? Please be specific.
Well, yes. What you're talking about is January 1, 2013. Some people call it Taxmageddon, and we're facing quite a number of problems all at once. First of all, there's the problem of the sequestration, another 10% cut to defense, the largest tax increase in the history of the country. All of these things pose a lot of challenges. And I think that the solution to these problems has to be done in a couple things. First, you have to reduce the size of the federal government. And the second thing you have to do is get the private sector going. You can't do it with just doing one or the other. The best way to get the private sector going, there's really two steps to that. The first thing there is to get the red tape under control. They're driving our business efficiency down and pulling people and driving jobs overseas. The second thing is we've got high unemployment, and yet we've got the highest corporate tax rate in the world. That doesn't make sense. So we need to reduce the corporate tax rate. And so a combination of those things, you've got to reduce the size of the federal government spending, and then you've got to take care of the red tape and reduce the taxes. You put that together, and you've got to hope over a period of time of putting the budget under control.
Congressman, thank you. Senator McCaskill, your response.
I'm not sure I heard anything that he was willing to compromise about. I've been part of a group in the Senate, Democrats and Republicans, that have been working together to try to hammer out this compromise. There is a lot of these provisions that have already been, quote-unquote, scored by the Congressional Budget Office, so we know what we need to do. We need to get to a $4 to $5 trillion reduction in our long-term debt over the next 10 years. And the Simpson-Bowles proposal had a lot of things in it that were worthy of our discussion and consideration. I'm willing to look at pieces of Simpson-Bowles, and there's a group of us that are. We're called the moderates in the Senate, and there are some Democrats and there are some Republicans, and that's the hope for fixing this problem. The hope is not on the far ends. The hope is in the middle, where we would take a balanced approach. I'm willing to compromise and lower the corporate rate, as Congressman Aiken advocates, because I think it'd be important for global competitiveness. But we have to have some revenue for the deficit, not just cutting the size of government. I'm for that. I talked about that in my opening. Also cutting the spending in government, maybe doing some means testing. I'm not sure we need to be buying Donald Trump's prescription drugs. This combination of things is how we can get to the compromise. We're not going to get there by being at opposite end of the rooms and shouting at each other. We're going to get there through good, hard, bipartisan work. And I think we can do it in the Senate through the moderate middle.
Senator, thank you. Next, Art Holliday of KSDK News Channel 5 will ask his question to Senator McCaskill. And, Senator, you will have 1.5 minutes to respond.
Senator, what will the national press say about Missouri voters if your opponent is elected?
You know, I don't really care. It's just not something that I worry about, what the national press says. I'm more worried about the people here in this state and the problems they face. You know, I was a single mom for a long time with 3 young kids. I know what it's like to wait and pick up your dry cleaning until you get your next paycheck. And that's what I'm focused on. And I think that this preoccupation with what the press is saying in the horse race, I want to get to work and help Missourians. I want to make sure we have student loans. I want to make sure that we have Social Security and Medicare. I want to make sure that people can rely on a minimum wage. I want to make sure that the workplace is fair. And so I'm honestly not that concerned. Now, I will be honest with you. If I lose this race, I'll hate it because I want our government to reflect our values. I want our government to reflect our best hopes and dreams. And I think Congressman Aiken's view is very narrow and leaves a lot of people out. And so I'll be sad, but I always trust the voters. I'll respect whatever decision they make, but I could care less about the national press.
Congressman.
Same question.
Same question.
Well, you know, it seems to me I've had a chance to travel for 18 months around the state of Missouri, and I have a pretty good sense of where people are. If you had any question of where we were about a government takeover of health care called Obamacare, 71% of the people have already voted on that. And if you take a look at some of the other things that are important to the citizens of Missouri, the idea about the fact that we need to have jobs, and you have a record where we have 43 months of the worst job record since the Great Depression. People care about the Second Amendment and the Constitution in the state of Missouri. My record is clear in that. I support the Second Amendment. I support the Constitution. I didn't support the president bombing Libya without constitutional authorization. And it seems to me, as I've had a chance to travel, my views are very much in sync with the voters of this state. And what's more, I have opposed the failed record and the failed policies which have given us the unemployment, the lack of jobs, and the other miscellaneous problems such as gasoline prices doubling. So I think my views are consistent with the people of Missouri, and I believe that they will reelect me. They'll elect me to the U.S. Congress.
Senator, would you like a rebuttal?
I don't think so.
Okay. Chris McDaniel is a political reporter of St. Louis Public Radio. He will now ask the next question to Congressman Aiken, who will have 1.5 minutes to respond.
Congressman Aiken. The federal wind production tax credit has been in place for 20 years, but it's set to expire at the end of this year. Some groups estimate that up to 2,000 Missouri jobs are supported by this credit. Will you vote to renew it? And what role do you see for wind and other renewable energy industries in Missouri's economy?
Well, look, I think that the approach that we should take on energy, first of all, is to have an energy policy. And I think that the energy sources should compete with each other. And the approach that we've been taking obviously doesn't work. And in terms of wind, I'm happy with it to compete with solar cells, compete with coal, oil, gas, nuclear, and let these different sources of energies work on their own. Now, the fact is that we really haven't been developing energy the way we should. If you think about America, it's pretty amazing. We have an unlimited almost supply of coal, natural gas, and oil. And while we're sitting on all of these resources in America, yet we haven't developed them. Why? The reason is because of big government. All kinds of rules and regulations that don't allow us to do the things that we should be doing. And what's the cost? Our gasoline prices have doubled. If we continue with the policy to shut down the coal industry, as Barack Obama has told us he's going to do, and Claire McCaskill voted to give them the power to regulate carbon, then our electric prices go up. So what we have to do is to take the blessings that we have in America, use it wisely, and allow these different forms of energy to compete with each other and let the citizens make the choices what kind and where they want to get their energy.
Congressman, thank you. Senator McCaskill.
Congressman Akin and I have a disagreement here. He does not believe that we should be encouraging, through subsidies or investments or credits, any kind of alternative energy. On the other hand, ironically, he's perfectly willing to do whatever it takes to protect big oil's subsidies and all of the goodies they get at the expense of the American taxpayer. Now, keep in mind that big oil are the most profitable corporations in the history of the planet. They book about $132 billion in profit a year, and we're giving them somewhere between $4 and $10 billion a year. Not the small independent guys, the big guys. Now, we have tried time and time again to say, let's stop giving big oil corporate welfare at the expense of the American taxpayer. And every time, the Republicans keep blocking it. He will not support homegrown energy with subsidies, but he'll do anything to protect big oil. I have it the other way around. I think we need to be supporting alternative energy, including wind, solar. We need all of it. I support the Keystone Pipeline, different than President Obama. I support fracking as long as we are doing it safely. I support wind, solar, all of that. I don't support continuing to give taxpayer handouts to big oil.
Congressman, would you like a rebuttal?
Well, I think it's interesting. I would like a rebuttal. Yeah, I think it's interesting that Clara talks about being a moderate and the fact that she's worried about the spending and the taxes and all, and yet I believe she's supported $6.9 trillion worth of deficit spending, and she calls herself a moderate. I guess the thing that comes to my mind is, how much do you have to spend in deficit spending to become a liberal?
Senator?
Well, you know, I will just say this. Congressman Akin has spent a lot of time in this campaign talking about stimulus and other things he says is wasteful. And if you look at the record, the interesting thing about it is Congressman Akin is only opposed to stimulus if there's a Democrat in the White House. Because many times, over $400 billion in stimulus he has voted for when President Bush was president, three different times. December 20th of 2001, $156 billion stimulus package. March 7th, 2002, $108 billion stimulus project. February 7th, 2008, $145 billion stimulus project. And a lot of deficit spending. During the Bush years, that's when they blew the Clinton surplus. And Congressman Akin was right there asking for earmarks.
Thank you, Senator. Next, Joan Berkman, president of Face Watchers Public Relations and representing the Clayton Chamber, will ask her question to Senator McCaskill.
Senator McCaskill, the Chamber represents a large number of small businesses who've had to make difficult decisions like cutting their labor force, holding and reducing their salaries, and cutting back on expenses during the recent economic crisis. It's clear that most governmental organizations did not make these same decisions, evidenced by a growing federal deficit, and several states and communities are now bankrupt. Do you have a real plan to encourage all governments, especially the federal government, to cut back on expenses?
We have actually shed a lot of public sector jobs through this very difficult economic times, both local and state. And finally, we're beginning to shed federal jobs. But it's not just federal employees we have to shed, because if we just put an artificial lid on employees, the government might do what they did during the Bush years, and that is begin to contract everything, not just buying services, not just buying stuff, but buying services. So that's why I supported a federal cap on spending. That's why I am number 50 from liberal to conservative, because I have worked to bring down federal spending. It's very, very important. I also think it's important to fight regulations for small businesses and cut taxes for small businesses, and I've done both of those. In fact, the St. Louis home builders came to me and said, you're not going to believe this. They're going to put a new rule on us right when our businesses are in the tank in this housing crisis. Can you help us with this regulation they're proposing? I went to work, and we stopped it. They wanted an unreasonable safety requirement of our home builders during this most difficult time in the economy for them. So common sense in terms of making sure regulations don't go into place that go too far, keeping protections on small businesses for tax cuts, and continuing to have the discipline to spend less money in the federal government.
Thank you, Senator. Congressman Akin, please respond.
Well, boy, I sure understand what it's like for small businesses, because they're coming down to my office in droves as a congressman. And each particular group of different kinds of businesses all have the same story. The only thing that changes is the particular federal agencies that's giving them such a hard time. And everybody has the same story. Over the last number of years, they say, it feels to us as though the federal government is trying to destroy us. They're our enemies. It's not just a matter of some simple safety rules. It's these inspectors that come, and no matter what you do, they're going to find more things wrong with you, to the point that businesses are telling me that they're intentionally leaving some things for the inspectors to find because they know they're going to get hit with a fine no matter what. And so we have created an environment that is toxic for business. We have radical deficit spending. We have a federal government out of control with the amount of red tape and things that they're imposing on businesses. And we wonder, and then a high tax rate, and we wonder why we don't have any jobs, why the jobs are being chased overseas. And, you know, the talk is fine, but the fact of the matter is that the unemployment and the deficit and the whole situation with the economy speaks for itself. It's not working, and big government is not the solution.
Thank you, Congressman. Our next question will be posed by Meredith McMahon of Clayton High School. She is the senior co-editor of the Globe News Magazine. And Meredith, please ask your question to Congressman Aiken.
Congressman Aiken, would you speak about your commitment to improving public school education in Missouri, especially given the educational choices you have made for your own children? I am referring to Congressman Aiken's decision to homeschool his children and Senator McCaskill's decision to send at least one of her children to private Catholic schools.
Well, thank you for that question. And, you know, all of us understand that education is absolutely critical. And one of the things we have in America is something we call freedom. And people can choose to educate the way they want. And I think that we need to preserve that freedom. And one of the things that I've done that not another congressman in the state of Missouri was willing to do was to vote no on No Child Left Behind. It's not that I want to leave children behind. It's that I don't have abiding faith in big government to fix problems in education. And so even though it was my president that offered the bill, I voted no because I don't think big bureaucrats generating red tape in Washington, D.C. help our schools. And so I was willing to stand on a basis of principle that education needs to be local. Do you know what makes the best education? It's when you have a mom and dad that love their kid and put a high priority on education. And with that kind of formula, education can work well for people. So I've always supported the freedom for people to choose the kind of education that they want. But I don't believe that the answers to fixing our schools in Missouri can be helped in any way by the large bureaucracy of federal government. So I've even encouraged that we could save a lot of money and get rid of a lot of that educational bureaucracy because it doesn't really contribute to our education. Thank you.
Senator McCaskill, your response.
I'm so grateful to my public education. All through school and undergraduate and law school, a proud graduate of the University of Missouri, and it allowed me to be who I am today. And for our country, it allows us to be that beacon on the hill. The other countries of the world look to our country for our emphasis on public education and particularly higher education. Congressman Aiken has been very clear. He wants the federal government completely out of education. No more Department of Education, no more school lunch program, and even harder to understand, do away with Pell Grants, do away with all federally backed student loans. Now, he says, well, private banks should do it. I don't know very many private banks that loan money to a 17-year-old that has no money. 300,000 young people in Missouri are attending college because a federally backed student loan or Pell Grant is helping them. That was me. I had a federally backed student loan. I couldn't have gotten through law school without it. I had to wait tables in addition to the loan, and it took me 8 years to pay it back, but I paid back every dime, and most young people do. We have to leave that doorway of opportunity open. It is not the third stage of cancer. The federal government's involvement in public education is important for our country. This is not about bureaucracy. It's about whether or not the middle class survives. It is a huge difference between Congressman Aiken and me.
I'd like to have a...
You have 45 seconds for a rebuttal, Congressman.
Yeah, thank you. I think this is a great illustration of the principle I was just talking about. I talked about maybe because of the fact that we're $1.5 trillion overspending in federal government, a massive amount, maybe we need to slink the federal government down some. So I suggested maybe the school lunch program could be shifted to the state. Now, I don't know whether the lunch's taste is good if the state does it, is whether the federal government does it. But Claire McCaskill seems to think this is a crisis if you don't have everything done by the federal government. Just a year or two ago, there were student loans that were made by private lending institutions. Obamacare changed all of that. Do you have to be against college and student loans to suggest we don't have the federal government doing all of that for us? I think not. Okay.
Congressman, you're out of time. Senator, would you like to respond?
Yes. I want to clarify this. What happened with the private lending for student loans? The private banks were not assuming the risk for those student loans. They were just the middleman administering the loans. The risk for the student loans remained with the federal government. So they were just taking a cut. And what we did was say, you know, we don't need the middleman to take a cut. We're going to have them go directly to the students, not do deficit spending, save that money that the bankers were making administering those loans, and allow kids to get the loans directly from the schools. But what Congressman Aiken has said is that the federal backing of those loans is a problem. And if that federal backing is not there, the private banks will not be making the loans.
Senator, thank you. We now need to proceed into our next segment of the program with questions from the audience. And the first question will be directed to Senator McCaskill. You will go first and have 1.5 minutes. I was born in Mexico and immigrated to the U.S. at the age of 4. Since then, my family and I have kept a close eye on the immigration policies and the working conditions of immigrants. If you are reelected, Senator, or if you become a senator, Congressman, how will you influence these policies and their related factors?
First, we are a nation of immigrants, but I'm a former prosecutor and I believe very much in enforcing the law. And I don't think anybody should be allowed to jump the line by breaking the law. So I believe it's very important that we enforce those laws, particularly against employers who knowingly hire illegal immigrants. That's the magnet. When I got to Washington, I asked the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency under President Bush, how many employers have you prosecuted for knowingly hiring illegal immigrants, taking advantage of them, cheating, not allowing your competitors to have an even playing field? And you know what? They didn't even know. They hadn't even emphasized that. We have turned that corner, and now you're beginning to see a drop in illegal immigration, and part of that is because we are pushing them harder on enforcing the law against employers. On the other hand, we should be stapling a green card to any student in this country who wants to stay here. We should be stapling a green card to their college diploma. We need them in this country. And finally, if you're young, a child, and you have been brought here through no fault of your own, I believe what the Bible says, the sins of the father should not be ascribed to the child, and they should not be forced to return to a country they've never known and never loved. And that's why I did support the DREAM Act, another difference between me and Congressman Aiken.
Senator, thank you. Congressman, your response.
Well, thank you. You know, all of us at one time or another, our parents were immigrants to this land as well. And one of the things that you find in all of those instances were that people did what we do in America. We followed the law. America is a nation of laws. And so we definitely, first of all, have to clean up our laws that have to do with immigration. But at the same time, we can't allow the president the authority to just impose a law that's not been passed by Congress, which is, of course, what happened on the DREAM Act. And the situation with immigration is one where we have to allow different states to be able to enforce their own laws. And the federal government has not been enforcing the immigration laws. And you see a crisis on the border. They've even gone to this fast and furious idea, giving high-powered rifles to drug dealers and stuff as people are doing human trafficking across our border. And somehow we don't have the backbone in the Senate and the administration to even enforce our laws. And the first thing off, if you're a nation of law, you have to enforce the law. I'm very sympathetic for people coming to this country, but it has to be done in an orderly and legal process, and that means businesses also shouldn't be hiring illegals. We need to be doing the check on that, which has been closed down.
Our second question from the audience, and this will go to Congressman Aiken first. What misconceptions do you want to clarify about yourself?
Well, thank you for that question, and I suppose that there's nothing like a debate like this for people to just get a chance to take a look and visit people. We've been all over the state, and I really believe that the election process is a fair one and a good one. As I have mentioned, the reason that I'm running for this office is because I see the bright hope for America is being diminished by a failed record. Now, the thing is, you can talk and you can use any distraction that you want. But the fact is that there is a record, and the record has not been good. We've had unemployment unlike anything we've seen since the Great Depression, and a huge level of deficit. Now, you can talk about being responsible, about spending money and everything, but when you promise that you're going to cut the deficit in half and then triple it, that's not a good sign. And the health care situation also. These are things that people are going to have to take a good look at in this election. You know, you said 71% of Missouri citizens said, we don't want Obamacare. And then you have a senator that just right after that goes and votes for it. And so I think that people are starting to get an understanding that this is an election about records. It's an election about what have we seen in 4 years. And the fact is, I understand, as I've traveled around this state, people realize it isn't working. It's time for a change.
Senator, same question about misconceptions.
That's a hard one. I think there's some people that have the misconception that I am not willing to stand up to anybody and anything when I think the policy involved is wrong. The misconception that because I supported President Obama, that I agree with him 98% of the time. I don't even agree with my mother 98% of the time, much less the President of the United States. I was disappointed when the President wouldn't support my spending cap. He was disappointed when I wouldn't go along with cap and trade. I was disappointed when he refused to quickly approve the Keystone Pipeline. There are differences. And what I try to do as a member of the United States Senate is to think about Missourians. And I don't worry so much about whose idea it is, whether it's a Republican idea or a Democratic idea. I don't worry about whether the leader of the Democratic Party is mad at me. I've had time out in my caucus many times, especially when I was going after the appropriators on earmarks. So I think correcting the misconception that I think Congressman Aiken is anxious to put out there, that somehow I am doing the bidding of my party or the president when I'm really trying to do the bidding of Missourians.
Senator, thank you.
Do I have a chance to respond to that?
Or? You can.
Okay, thank you.
45 seconds.
Yeah, well, I really didn't say that she agreed with Barack Obama 90% of the time. I said she just voted with him 98% of the time. And so that's I just want to make sure that that's clear. This is a record. This isn't just talk or promises. This is a record, voted 98% of the time. Thank you.
Senator?
Well, that record included confirmations and procedural votes. If you look at the ranking of the senators, which is done every year by a nonpartisan group, most liberal to most conservative, for 6 solid years, I've been smack dab in the middle. And you don't get to the middle by doing what your party tells you to do. You get to the middle through hard work, compromise, and working with your Republican colleagues.
Our next question from the member of the audience, Senator McCaskill, this will be directed to you first. Do you support all forms of stem cell research?
I do. I think that the Lord gave us intelligence to discover scientific advancements, and I particularly support all of the research that is done that has made us the envy of the world in terms of our ability to find cures. Finding cures is an important part of what stem cell research is all about. It gives hope to millions of people in this country. I'm proud of the work that has been done in Missouri in terms of this important medical research, and I think it's important that it continue.
Senator, thank you. Congressman?
Yes, I think stem cell research is just phenomenal in the kinds of things that are being done. In fact, you almost think some of them are miraculous. As I recall, there are over 40 different stem cell kinds of cures for things that anybody else would in a previous decade would thought would be totally impossible. There is the embryonic stem cell part, which I don't support. I believe life begins at conception. But there was just a major breakthrough last week which showed that you don't even need the embryonic because they found a way to make the cells what they call plastic so that you can take an adult cell and make it to do any kind of function of any other cell. So there's no real need to do the embryonic. But as I believe some of you know, I'm pro-life. And I believe life begins at conception.
All right, our next question from the audience, and this will be directed to the congressman first. What criteria do you plan to use in deciding whether to vote to confirm a Supreme Court nominee? Congressman?
Well, I think the first thing is that we are a system of laws, as I've mentioned before, and the job of the court is to interpret the existing law, not to create law. So that would be the very first thing I would look for. If you take a look at some of the big social upheavals and lousy decisions you get out of Washington, D.C., a lot of them have come from judges who got frustrated and wanted to become legislators. And so that would be the thing I would look for, first of all, in a judge. I would look for a judge that doesn't think that maybe the Constitution is plastic and we need to adapt some ideas from some foreign country and stick it in and pretend that that's part of our Constitution. I don't think that's the right way to go. So I believe that we have to keep the judges doing the proper function of judges, and that would solve an awful, awful lot of problems. It also tends to push problems farther down in the system so states can decide and local communities can decide what they want to do instead of having the federal government and the Supreme Court acting like they're God and telling us one thing or another. Thank you.
Congressman, thank you. Senator?
Well, as somebody who spent a lot of time in a courtroom, I really look to judges who have actually had experience in a courtroom. I think it's important that you can relate to the cases that you hear in a real way. So whether you have spent time as a lawyer in the courtroom or a trial judge, that's important to me. I'll tell you the truth, too. This may irritate the justices on the Supreme Court now, but I'd love us to have a Supreme Court judge that didn't go to Harvard or Yale. I really think having somebody on the Supreme Court that went to a really good state school that maybe didn't go to one of the elite Ivy schools would be good for the court because they have to make a lot of difficult calls. And I know, we don't want activist judges. I don't want activist judges either. But the irony is we have a very conservative court in some ways right now, and they did a very activist thing by giving us the Citizens United case. There was no precedent to call corporations people. So, activist judges are in the eye of the beholder. If you like the decision, they're not activists. If you don't like the decision, they're activists. So it is important, I think, that the judges and the judges that I want to confirm are the ones that have had real life experience in a courtroom and can relate to the people whose lives are at stake when they make these very important decisions.
Senator, thank you. Another question from a member of our audience. And Senator McCaskill, you'll be first up on this. How would you preserve Medicare for current and future retirees?
Well, much differently than my opponent. Congressman Aiken has advocated, he said he believes that Medicare is unconstitutional, and he advocates privatizing Medicare. I don't think it works to make seniors arm wrestle insurance companies to figure out whether or not their claim is going to be paid or whether they can afford the coverage. And the way that they are planning on privatizing it would be just giving you a certain amount of money to help you buy your insurance, and after that ran out, you're on your own. I do think we have to means test Medicare. As I mentioned earlier, I don't think we can afford to buy prescription drugs for people of means, for people who have money. We can't afford that as a nation. We've got to figure out a better way to bring down costs by incentivizing the system in different ways. Right now, my mother, who's ill and has a lot of chronics, she could have three or four blood works in 1 month from three or four different doctors. And we're paying for all of that. No one is even trying to make sure that maybe one set of blood work might get the job done. Having a primary care doc that is more of a gatekeeper, incentivizing the hospitals like we did down in Springfield, where we said, let's take your Medicare population, check for customer satisfaction, but if you can bring the cost down, we'll bonus you. They saved $17 million, and the federal government wrote them a bonus check of $4 million. And the taxpayers came out ahead $13 million on the deal. Let's take that to scale. That makes sense.
Congressman, your response.
Well, first of all, let's talk about Medicare. Let's talk about what the actual record is. Claire McCaskill has voted to cut $716 billion out of Medicare, and I have not. Our record is different. Now, what does that $716 billion include? $260 billion for hospital services, $39 billion for skilled nursing, $17 billion for hospice, $66 billion for home health care, $156 billion for Medicare Advantage. That's money that she voted to take out of Medicare. That does not help Medicare. In addition, she voted to put in the IPAB, that 15-person board that has the net effect of moving into rationing health care and deciding how old you are that you can get some particular treatment. That also is a bad idea. Now, what do we have to do to fix Medicare? What we have to do is get the government out of the price-setting business for every particular procedure and allow a whole host of people to bid on that so seniors have a choice of the providers that they want. Seniors deserve a choice, and they ought to be able to pick the kind of system they want and not have it forced on them by the federal government. There's one thing worse than having the insurance company between the patient and the doctor, and that's having the federal government in between them.
Senator, 45 seconds for a rebuttal.
This $716 billion just kills me. Congressman Aiken voted to remove the same $716 billion from Medicare, not once but twice, in the Ryan budget. The difference is that instead of using that to fill the donut hole, like we did in the Affordable Care Act, using that to make sure that the hospitals don't need so much reimbursement because they're not taking care of so many people in the emergency room that don't have insurance, what did they do with the money? They gave Kim Kardashian another tax cut. They gave the wealthy in this country another tax cut on top of the Bush tax cut. That's what they did with the $716 billion. I strengthened Medicare and never cut one dime of benefits. They decided the thing to do with the money they took out of Medicare, the same money that they were going to give another tax cut to the wealthy. That's another big difference between Congressman Aiken and me.
Congressman.
Yes. Claire is saying, she's got it wrong. The $716 billion that the Republicans put in our Medicare proposal stayed in Medicare. We didn't take it out and put it somewhere else. And so that's just factually not correct.
Congressman, this question from the audience will start with you. What is your policy and your position about the Israeli-Iran situation?
Well, that's a ticklish one, and the first thing off is that I think that what we should do is to work with the people who are allies and stop apologizing people to a people who have been our enemies. I think it is unsafe for our country and for the civilized world for Iran to be able to develop nuclear weapons, and in one way or the other, that has to be stopped. I believe that we should when we have Netanyahu come to our country, if he wants to have a visit with the president, I think we should show respect to him and have that visit. And the situation with Iran is like the situation in other parts of the Middle East. These people, when they see us weak and vacillating and leading from the rear and apologizing, all that does is to encourage them. Our enemies understand in the Middle East and other places, our enemies understand something, and that is an America that's strong. That's why I haven't voted to cut 20% out of the defense budget the way Claire McCaskill has.
Senator.
Well, Iran cannot be allowed to get a nuclear weapon, and military action must be on the table. But the sanctions are working. We were able to press, and I was part of the group that did press, doing, once again, bipartisan legislation with my Republican colleagues to really screw down the sanctions, not just economic sanctions in terms of trade, but also cutting them off from the World Bank. And finally, we have people around the world that have joined us. We have Iran isolated now. Ahmadinejad is in some real political trouble. Now, we've got to stay vigilant, and we can't let them get the weapon. But I got to tell you, the Middle East is tough, and you've got to be thoughtful. And this isn't, nobody's apologizing to anybody. Nobody's leading from behind. We're navigating a very difficult area. There are differences in our records, however. While I have been on the leading edge of sanctions against Iran, Congressman Aiken has voted for aid for Iran, not once but twice in his congressional career, and voted against aid for Israel. This is backwards. We have to always support Israel, and we should not be supporting Iran.
Congressman, a rebuttal?
Well, the packages that she's talking about, she's misrepresented the record. And I am, in fact, the one that's supporting the fact that we should not be giving foreign money to a number of places. And that includes, of course, Libya and Pakistan and let's see, one other country as well.
Syria.
You know, when somebody burns our flags, when they torture the people that gave us the information to get Osama bin Laden, those people are not our friends, and I don't support giving them foreign aid. And so I disagree with her comments.
Senator?
Congressman Aikens is having ads are being run against me right now about voting no on the effort to remove foreign aid from Libya, Pakistan, and Syria. Congressman Aiken has joined a very small group in the Senate in this position. Not one member of the Senate Armed Services Committee supported this extreme amendment. Every single Republican said this would make our country in danger. This would not make us safer. This would not make the Middle East safer. There were only 10 senators that voted for this amendment. This is the position he wants to take to the United States Senate. Once again, being on the extreme edge, not being thoughtful, not being reasonable. This is not politics. This is the safety of our nation.
Our time is running out, so we now have to proceed to the final part of tonight's program by asking the candidates to offer your final remarks. First, Senator McCaskill, your 3-minute closing statement.
Well, it has been great to be here at this debate tonight. I appreciate everyone watching and people participating. There are many differences between Congressman Aiken and me, and we've had a chance to talk about some of them tonight, but there are many more. I certainly hope that people look at truthaboutaiken.org and learn the truth about Todd Aiken's positions. I'd like to spend a minute on one we didn't get a chance to talk to about tonight, too much tonight, and that was equal pay for equal work. You know, as somebody who was a single mom with 3 kids, as somebody who had to work their way through school, I'm focused on parity in the workplace. I support equal pay for equal work. I think it's part of the equality that's guaranteed in our Constitution. Congressman Aiken has said that that is not what he supports. He supports the boss being able to decide whether or not you get paid less just because you're a woman. And if you look at Congressman Aiken's office, in fact, he is the boss that does that. His women staff make 23.4% less than the men in his office. That is not the way we should have it in America. If you're doing the same work, you should be getting the same pay. Also, I think it's very important that we keep government spending down. I have, in fact, voted and working to do away with automatic pay raise for Congress. I think that is a dumb idea. I have sponsored efforts to do away with the automatic pay raise for Congress. In fact, I have never voted for an automatic pay raise for Congress. Congressman Aiken voted to raise his pay and 5 days later voted against fully funding the veterans program. That's 2001. 2002, voted to raise his pay. 2 months earlier, he was the only member of the Missouri delegation to vote against the farm bill. 2003, voted to raise his pay. 4 months earlier, one of 14 to say no to a center for exploited and missing children. September 14, 2004, voted to raise his pay. 6 months earlier, he was one of five to oppose the National School Lunch Program. 2005, once again, voted to raise his pay. 2 months earlier, had voted to cut the veterans' programs by $13 billion. Voted to raise his pay in 2006, and then voted to cut the vets' program by $6 billion. And in 2007, voted to raise his pay, and then was one of 36 people to vote against funding for Head Start. You know, I'm a daughter of rural Missouri. I worked my way through school. I went to Washington after learning about the pain of victims and the beauty of justice in a courtroom. I also learned about how to hold government accountable as a government auditor. I am proud to be called a moderate as your United States Senator. I believe in compromise. I believe in moderation. I believe working with people no matter what their party is. Ask for you, the honor of representing you again.
Congressman.
Thank you. Thank you all for making this evening possible. You may have noticed that Claire McCaskill seems to want to escape from the failed basic economic mess that's been created in Washington, D.C. It's a little bit like a magician. Look over here while I put my hand in your pocket. And, of course, her advertising and everything backs up anything but taking a look at where we are with the economy and jobs and the failed programs that we've seen in energy. Now, both of us have voted on a whole series of things, and what your decision should be based on is you need to judge on our records. Starting off, Claire McCaskill made the promise that she was going to be transparent in the things that she was doing. But when you go to take a close look at that, you find out that she has gotten rich making a business that takes advantage of other people being in poverty. She transferred $39 million to her home business, and there was no record of transparency whatsoever. And she talked about that stimulus bill. It had $1 million in there. She cut funding for veterans and teachers, but managed to get $1 million in for her home business. So much for transparency. You've seen what's going on in energy. You got a war on coal. We're stopping drilling. The Keystone Pipeline, gas prices have doubled. Jobs, you see what we have, is a record that's as bad as the Great Depression. Deficit, they said you're going to cut the deficit in half, and Barack Obama and Claire McCaskill triple it with $1.5 trillion. And then health care, we said we didn't want it. 71% of us said we didn't want it. What do we get? Obamacare, because of Claire McCaskill. Now, the reason for these failures is because there's this instinctive sense that the federal government has to do everything, and that's why the budget's out of control. And the reason they failed is because they forgot the secret of America's greatness. You see, America was founded on this visionary idea that we have a creator that blessed us with life and liberty and the pursuit of happiness. The things came from God. And then life. We as Americans respect life. You see it the way that the policemen work and the hospitals and the firemen. And liberty, the idea that we can vote, express our opinions, and keep the things that we earn. And then the pursuit of happiness, the greatest of all blessings, really. The idea that every single one of us is different, and each of us can pursue the dreams in our own hearts. And as Americans have done that, and people tell us, you can't do it, it won't work. There have been Americans that are courageous, and they say, but I'm going to try. And as they do that, America has been built one dream at a time. It's called the American Dream, and it's about freedom. And that's the reason why 4% of the world population has produced the great results that we have. So I ask you to restore freedom and vote for me for the U.S. Senate. Thank you.